Welcome to Bar Fights with attorney and advocate Sarah Klein, taking on issues that matter and advocating for legal, cultural, and political change everywhere in order to protect children and vulnerable adults. Joining the conversation are survivors, advocates, lawyers, media personalities, athletes, celebrities, authors, wellness aficionados, and many more. Because bringing real justice takes a team of experts who care. Now, leading the fight is your host, Sarah Klein.
Hey, you guys, and welcome back to Bar Fights. I am so happy to be with you guys today on this Monday, and I'm bringing someone so special to you guys today. Dr. Janie Lacey, she's a renowned trauma psychotherapist and relationship expert. She's a speaker, she's a podcast host, and my favorite, she's a champion for women. And you've seen her everywhere. I've seen her everywhere. She's on Good Morning America, CNN Headline News, Court TV, lots of other shows. And she's the creator of a program that we're going to talk about today called Women Redeemed. Dr. Lacey is incredible. We are going to pick her brain today. Dr. Lacey, welcome to Bar Fights.
Glad to be here, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So I want to dive in. I always ask this question to people that work in our field. You work in trauma, you're a specialist, you work with women. What attracted you to this line of work? I have a little spoiler alert because I watched your TED Talk, which I highly recommend you guys. It's called Breaking the Chain of Unhealthy Relationships. But fill my listeners in a little bit on what brought you to the work that you're doing today.
Well, I always say that the work found me. I didn't necessarily find the work because I was on my way, Sarah, to getting my MBA degree and doing all things business. But God had a bigger plan because obviously they all kind of intertwined. But when I look back, what has happened was that my own trauma was leading me actually to business, in the sense of I came from a family where women were more subservient to men. And so when the toxic relationships that I would witness, the women in my family had no choice because they were financially dependent. So we're more in survival mode. I didn't understand all of that growing up, but when I was old enough to kind of understand that, so my goal in my mind at that time was I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can so I never have to depend on anybody. Yeah. So sometimes, right, our pain points really lead to our purpose points. So I was in my MBA degree, but what I had discovered was I was not a good communicator. You know, surprise, surprise, the people that see me communicate all the time. I was not a good communicator because when I was, my quick story was when I was a young girl up until I had my adult teeth, I had rotten teeth. So I can look back and my mom would never say this, but I can assume that she was going through a lot of depression. So it put the bottle in my mouth and I would sit there and my teeth were rotten when they came in. So here I was in college now, Sarah, and I was still speaking as if I had rotten teeth. I would have my mouth covered. And here I was getting to be in my MBA degree and I had to get up in front of the class and do PowerPoints and all those other things. So I realized that I had was doing this thing because it was pointed out to me. And I realized that through that process that I was still acting like I had rotten teeth. Yeah. So I signed up for a leadership enhancement program at the University of Central Florida to learn how to publicly speak to get me through my MBA program. But lo and behold, being a woman of faith, I believe that this happened in God's timing, was positioned me in this leadership enhancement program with a licensed mental health therapist to do presentations with her. And at that point in time, I had the stigma around counselors, like who would go to a therapist? You go speak to God, like why would you go speak to a stranger, right? So I literally had what, so when people, when I come across people like that, I understand it. So when I paired with her, I had decided that, you know what, I really like helping people. And in helping people, I was particularly attracted to women that had toxic relationships, not only because my own experience, but I had connected the dots that we had such this huge tragedy in my own family that up until that point, nobody really spoke about. Nobody really spoke about what happened to my eldest sister, Carmen. We knew this thing was happening in the background, and I realized that was what was contributing to us, meaning the women. My dad had eight daughters. What was contributing to us all having toxic relationships, Sarah. So Make a long story short, God led me to drop out of the MBA program, get into a counseling psychology program, and I believe everything just kind of led me to my purpose points. And that's not only getting into a place of healing in my own life from toxic relationships, but then being able to help other women hold up the ladder for them. Because what I find, especially women that are ambitious, that are successful, all the things that I said would keep me out of being in a toxic relationship, still, I was still in toxic relationships. So when we're ambitious, we're C-suite, we're financially dependent, all the other types of things, we tend to hide our toxic relationships a lot more because of shame and guilt, and I should be smart and I should know better. And then you start telling some of your girlfriends, and then they're looking at you like, hello, I mean, look at you, but we don't see what other people see because we still have that little girl inside of us. So what led me to that is the little girl of that couldn't, Karma's no longer here, but I'm here, and so many other little girls, even though we're women and we can be successful by the world standard, we still don't necessarily can truly, truly understand our worth, even though the world may see us. So, my long story short, that's why I'm here to help so many women.
Wow. So lots of things, places to go with that. But what you said right now, but you also said it in your TED talk, healthy relationships start in our childhood. So obviously unhealthy relationships, toxic relationship also, stem from what happened in our childhoods. And what you said in your TED talk, our childhood experiences will have an impact on our adult relationships. And when I heard that, I'm like, ding, ding, ding. And then what you just said about being a professional woman, all these degrees, doing this, in my mind, I look at people like that on the internet or whatever, and I think they don't have a problem in the world. They've got it all covered. Their relationships are probably the best, right? And so that's interesting. I just had some insights there. So you get a client or you meet a woman, and everyone has a childhood story. I think some of us worse than others, but also, even if you had that white picket fence childhood, you're still learning patterns about how to show up in the world for good or for bad. When you meet a client, how do you start to deconstruct that? Like, if somebody's listening right now going, oh, ding, 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 our childhood experiences will have an impact on our adult relationships. How do we start to kind of, I guess, trace that back and figure out what that convoluted mess actually really looks like, you know?
The hidden secret is this. It's what we call Jahara's window, Sarah. So Jahara's window, in its basic sense, right? There's four quadrants. One of those quadrants are things that you can see about yourself that I also can see about yourself, right? Another quadrant would be, for example, things that Sarah can see about herself that I have yet to know and see about her. And then one of the main quadrants that I'm interested in as a psychologist and psychotherapist is what Sarah can't see about herself, but what also I yet can't see about her. Because we have these subconscious programming and these patterns, as you mentioned, it's not the problems. People normally come to therapy because I know what the problem is, right? And part of that is the pattern, right? We can deal with problems, but we got to look at the patterns because the patterns of life is going to tell me what is it about, let's say Susan, who's coming to therapy and she's smart, she's ambitious, she's successful, she's attractive, but yet she still finds herself in these codependent relationships where she crumbles in the thought of that this person will leave her, for example, that abandonment wound comes up to play. So in that Jahara's window, there are certain things that Sarah has yet to see or Susan has yet to see about herself that I have yet to discover. And that's what we're calling that subconscious is going to be our programming and our wiring, but we can never outwill our subconscious with our conscious mind because we think, well, I know these things. I know these things, but why do I still keep doing these things? Because I can't just know it and outwill the subconscious. We got to get in there and we have to reprogram that subconscious. And that's where we use our conscious mind to help us reprogram that subconscious. But that is what we call doing the work. When you hear people say, do the work, like a very simple example, let's say Susan is in my office and she says, well, then how do I change the programming? One of the most practical things that we can do that any of your listeners can start doing today, but it takes consistency and repetition and emotion, right? So let's say I feel not good enough. So the very first exercise that I would give Susan is we need to look for all the evidence that goes against that core wound of not good enough. So I'd have her write out all the 15 or 20 is what I try to aim, all the evidence, like factual things that shows you are good enough. And sometimes it could be, well, you know what? I'm the first millionaire in my family. I'm the first one that bought a house. It could be something as superficial as those types of things, but that does show to her that she's good enough. So we get that list out. And then she has to, every time that thought of that, she's conscious of the thought that I'm not feeling good enough. I'm going in this board meeting in the corporation. There's all these men here. Here I am still feeling like a little girl among the big boys, right? So she pulls out that list and we have to conjure up. It's not just reading the list in of itself, right? Because affirmations in and of themselves don't necessarily work. It
Right.
has to be, does she want to believe it? And when she thinks about believing it, does she get the good feelings that come up? So we have to take that emotion, even if it's 55% of good feelings, and then we read the list and we combine the two over and over and over again, rinse and repeat. Because up until that point, until she's sitting on the couch, she's rinsed and repeat the not good enough messages,
Yeah.
even if she's not aware of it. Because you can show me, and this is the scary thing I even think about in my own life, Sarah. I can, if you show me all the men, you know, if Susan was to show me all the men she's ever been with, I can tell how she really feels about herself. It's
Huh?
like that Thanksgiving table, right? All the intimate relationships we have, and it could be girlfriends too. All the intimate relationships that we have, it's a reflection of me. And that's the subconscious message, because sometimes if we grew up as a victim as a little girl, and we truly were a victim, we can still have that mentality that I want someone to come in my life and rescue me, because essentially the parents that we should have had that should have covered us, and it's not to ever blame our parents, but it's to look back and understand why we are the way that we are. Why even sometimes as women that we can be heterosexual, but we still are looking for our mommies in the bed with men. And that's why we have to understand where we didn't get nurtured, we didn't get guidance, where we felt, yes, our parents can say, oh yeah, we loved you and you had all these things, but did we feel loved? It's an experience that happened inside of us. So people, when we kind of look at trauma, right? It's that good old definition that people think it's all of the stuff out here. It's no, it's not necessarily about what happened to us, about how we interpreted that experience inside of us, known and unknown. But the unknown is that Jehovah's window, because that's the stuff that's going to keep programming us to kind of, you know, we can leave these toxic relationships, but we find ourselves right back into, it's like the dog that returned to its vomit. It really is looking at that vomit as gourmet meal, not realizing that it's should have been left in the past.
Yeah, and I think that there's a part of that, especially for those of us that consider ourselves a little bit smart in life, where you go, what in the world am I, you know, the definition of insanity, right? Here I am again, and I logically know better, and yet I can't get myself out of this. And then you start to beat yourself up, you feel more shame, you feel more embarrassed, you feel, you know, and then I've seen people get to the point where they say, I kind of give up, I've tried everything, and I'm still repeating the same old stuff, and I can't get out of it. So I'm just going to, you know, remove myself from, you know, the dating world, or not work anymore, or just, you know, retreat into themselves, because they're so beat up by that cycle that you just so perfectly laid out. And so the questions of how, right? You mentioned a little bit, you know, the list, for example. What are some of the other ways? And is this what they call like neuro-linguistic pro?
Right,
Is that what
quantum
this
physics.
is? Yeah,
It's like some level of quantum physics, exactly. I just
yes.
break it down to so where people can understand. When people hear
Yeah.
quantum physics, they're thinking they're going out to space. No,
Yeah,
we
yeah,
have
yeah.
everything we need inside of us, but it is
Yeah.
hard to do the work. And as you mentioned in my TED talk, I give the three pillars: is we have
Yeah.
to do the mindset work, then the inner work is exactly what I'm talking about, is reprogramming those childhood messages, and then the body work, because the body does keep the score. When you think about, you know, when someone is, you may be with a toxic person and you may have no reason to even think that they're toxic yet, but your body feels anxious. You can't rest when you're with them. You always feel like you have to perform. Your body's telling you something about that person. Right. But we don't listen to our body, because what happens, and I'm saying this with a lot of the women in my community, Women Redeem, is then the people truly that are healthy for them, they are not attracted to them, because they're still attracted to the unhealthy parts of themselves. And we'll call it chemistry. We've all been there. Well, I don't have any chemistry. I'm not attracted to him, but we're still attracted to what feels like home. That's unavailable men. That's addict men, high narcissistic traits, right? Because the sex is good, all the other things, right? Because we're used to that. We're used to being in the spaces and places when people are completely unavailable. And as little girls, we learn to bat our eyes, perform, split our, put a split in our skirts to get someone's attention because that is validating and accepting when we catch their eye. But if we were to show up in this space, right, and we can get into masculine, feminine energy, but when we get into a certain space and there truly is someone who's available to us, we find him boring. We are not attracted to him. We find this script, and that's the reworking that we have to do, or we're going to continue to find the same thing over and over again. To your point, then we're going to be like, well, I give up. I'm not dating. I keep finding the bad boys or people who are going to hurt me. And we don't realize that we are the problem. And that's the most hard. And even saying that personally, it's like the most hurt, it's hard and it's hurtful to ourselves to realize, you know what? I'm the common denominator in all of my friendships and relationships. Time for me to do work, which is why I've discovered the four pillars in my own work.
To do something different, right? And I think it's also an important message that it's not our fault, right? The programming that we received as little ones that we're living out and trying to, rewrite the end of that story, we're never going to. We're banging our heads against the closed door. It wasn't our fault. And so rewiring sort of exactly those sort of very basic, very fundamental beliefs about ourselves, and actually try to do the work, do something differently. Interesting. And I also heard you talk about something called the life map tool. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how maybe we can employ that also?
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I do want to really reiterate what you said is that our programming is not our fault, but as adult women and men, our healing is our responsibility, right? So we have a lot of information and we have a lot of things that can really help us get to that next level. And I'm a big believer that sometimes the things that we need to heal are also our block in relationships and our businesses and feeling fulfilled. So the life map is a hallmark tool that I use early on in therapy with clients. It's one of the hallmarks. And what that means is that many people have never really mapped out their life. And the very simple thing that people can do, the listeners can do, they can do this today, is I have my clients from each decade of their life, their earliest memory to about 10 and 11, 11 to 12, 11 to 20, and then 20 to 30, and then however old they are, they're taking each decade of their life. And then I have them draw a line, and above the line, they're going to be doing all the markers and their memory of all the positive memories. And then below the line, they're going to be mapping out any type of negative memories, or even if they don't find that it was negative, something that was detrimental in their life. They lost their grandmother, all these types of things. And we're doing that for each decade. And on top of that, we're also writing out our most intimate relationships. That could be friendships, that could be with boyfriends or girlfriends. They're mapping all of those things out, and we have to write them out, and we put them on a wall in my office. We'll tape them on the wall, and we're processing a couple of things. So what I'm looking for is who was the influencers, and then what are some of the messaging that she or he potentially is taking from that through the processing of their timeline. And a lot of that doesn't come out until we process it. Because I can watch when someone's telling me about an event that was horrific, but they either don't have any memory of it, or they're telling me as if it's a Netflix series, it's someone else's life. Then that's telling me something about her or him. They're disconnected from their self. So it gives us a lot of rich information from that very basic life map. And anyone can start drawing, writing out their events of their life. And then the other part that I have them do is take pictures along that timeline that they may have or they may need to collect from family members, and we start putting it on that timeline, because then the point is at some point we're trying to do, we can't do it in early therapy, we do what we call reparenting, is we learn to start giving ourselves what we did not get, because if we don't do that, we're going to continue to chase it in other people. So that's the long-term work, but the early work is that life map, which is the very, very basic. And I suggest anyone do that. They can take a journal, they can take a piece of paper and start just writing out as much memories as possible. And there's something about taking it out of our head, using our motor skills, writing it on paper. It's amazing how much stuff gets flooded. And then I'm also paying attention to when they tell me, oh, this part was so hard. I could barely even like get through when I was writing this about this event. that's going to give me a little bit of indication when there's residual or what we call unfinished business in psychology is coming up for them. That gives me a little asterisk. We need to revisit this. Or the other part that I just mentioned, there's a disconnect because we learn to disassociate or we learn to disconnect ourselves from painful events that have happened in our childhood because it was a survival mechanism. And then the
Yes.
reason why that example is important for some of your listeners is that we can be in relationships or we can be in spaces or places where we're disconnected. We're off in a spaceship and you're not even really present in your body. And that was potentially a childhood survival mechanism to disassociate from your body, because whether your family is fighting or whether there was some type of abuse that was occurring, you learn it as a coping mechanism. But it's a hell of a way to live as an adult when you can
Oh,
take that
yeah.
coping mechanism to still be disconnected.
Yeah, I have a little example of that. I dropped my laptop on my toe and my bone came out and I broke it and shattered it and all this stuff. And I had zero pain reaction at all because I go ding, ding, ding. I need to talk about this because as a grown adult woman, I have a bone sticking out. I was so dissociated from my body still, decades later. That I didn't shed a tear. I didn't even go to the doctor until the next day. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. Right. And I think about that in context of what you're saying. Wow. I should have asked you this at the beginning, but I want my listeners to get this. The definition of a toxic relationship. Sometimes I think we think, oh, I'm not in one because nobody's hitting me or putting my head through a wall or whatever. Can you give us your definition of a toxic relationship? Because I think my listeners are really going to be able to see themselves in this more than maybe we think.
I like to break it down in its very basic sense, and I call it the three C's.
Okay.
So, is there high conflict in the relationship? Is there high control? And is there competition? And then everything else, when I kind of take an inventory with people, we can put them under those umbrellas. And competition, people like, oh, there's no competition. Well, it could be something as simple as, let's say, we'll use Susan as my example. Susan is telling her boyfriend, hey, you know what? I got a promotion. Oh, well, that's cool. You know what? I'm getting a promotion too, right? So we'll both be, so there's some level of always a one-upping, or you tell something and they could be happy for a moment, but they have to bring it back to them, which is also could be a certain level of narcissistic traits, but that will be competition. Conflict. Do I feel like we're always having some type of argument, or when I bring up some type of issue, then it's my fault. So then I've learned to like lower, I learned to lose myself in that relationship where I'm thinking that I have to overthink everything I'm saying. And that's where my high performers, she's killing it at her job, but in her relationship, she's walking on eggshells because she really can't communicate the way that she wants to because, and I'm using just heterosexual language, because he's going to take it the wrong way, or it always ends up in a fight, or it's always my fault, right? So we're kind of looking at those types of dynamics that occur in the relationship, which is shouldn't be that way. But what will happen is if we're used to not having a voice, for example, then we're internally we're blaming it. Well, maybe it was me, which right is looking at the term we hear a lot right now, gaslighting. We start gaslighting ourselves. Well, maybe he's right. Maybe it was me. Well, maybe, and then we go back to performance mode. Maybe if I do this more, maybe if I have sex more, maybe if I'm cooking more, maybe if I'm listening more. If you start telling yourself that maybe I should more, right? There's some clues that something is not right there. And what happens is when we're in these toxic relationships is that we get into these places where these three C's can come to play, but we start questioning ourselves because we are used to at some point in time where we internalize that we are the problem.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, have you ever worked with a client that's, let's say, married for a long time and you're piecing all this together and she's going, whoa, do toxic relationships, can they heal? Or is it once it's that dynamic, or what if one person, starts to, grow and heal, but the other partner isn't? I mean, do you ever see this work where, if somebody's listening right now going, oh crap, what do I do? Can there be happy endings?
First, I'm glad that you said marriage, because we have a society, we still have this misperception that because someone's been married a long time, that somehow we put the gold standard. Well, they've been married
You're
20,
right.
30 years or 40 years.
Yes.
And I tell you, Zara, as a psychotherapist, I say, so what?
So
Right?
what?
You can
Yeah.
be, you can, somebody can be married for 30 or 40 years. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're in a healthy relationship, and it doesn't mean that they're both happy. Sometimes people are committed to being committed, and sometimes that comes from religious context, or that comes from just a dynamic of codependency. So with that being said, when we talk about toxic relationships, it doesn't necessarily mean people dating. There are people right now, because I'm actually working with them, right? There are people who are married longer than my parents have been together, probably longer, some of them even than I've been alive, that are in toxic relationships. And I could tell you what happens in these dynamics is that people learn to survive their marriages, even though they may be in a long-term relationship. And let's say a typical example would be, especially with a lot of my clients, there's a lot of wealth involved. So there's a lot of wealth involved, and they now have an empire. So they've learned that there's not going to be no War of the Roses because there was never no prenup because they built together. So they learned to have two separate silos within the relationship, but publicly, I can tell you this without a doubt, most of them publicly, you would think that they have the most glorious relationship. We're doing, hashtag couple goals under their comments. But what has happened is there's no sexual relationship. They've learned to be in silos, but they're staying together for their kids. They're staying together for their assets. And I can tell you without a doubt, sometimes it doesn't even mean it's physical, that they're getting their emotional, sometimes sexual needs outside of that relationship, but they've learned to tolerate it, or someone has learned to lose their voice, right? Another example of that would be, as I just mentioned, in my own family, where there's more of a dependence,
Yeah.
where let's say that she's not had many sexual partners and that she's learned to rely on this person financially. So she's also learned that it doesn't make a difference if I keep fighting and bickering because nothing changes, nothing changes. But as long as I get him in therapy and get him in front of the right therapist, something magically is going to happen. It doesn't work that way. What happens is that she doesn't want to deal with her own stuff because she doesn't want to have to make a decision. So I'd just rather fix someone else, and someone else has to be the problem, and I don't have to see, well, why am I tolerating this? Why do I keep looking the other way every time he's telling him he's going to cheat on me? He's cheated on me, and then I forgive him. And then so somehow I feel like maybe it's my fault. So in those situations, the toxic relationship continues. They may have moments of things are okay, but the same cycle happens over and over again. So we had that couple that just learns to deal, turn the other way, have some level of agreement. The other ones, and women still today are the number one person that files for divorce in heterosexual relationships. So when looking at it from that dynamic, so she's leaving, it's usually because she's outgrown, she's reading the books, she's doing podcasts, she's going to therapy, he's coming in and out of therapy, she's the one dragging him in. And at some point, people get sick of being sick and they start making a decision. And when they make that decision, usually when women, they make that decision long before they file the paperwork, long before they even let the other person know that they're leaving. She starts disconnecting. And then when she starts saying, I just don't care anymore. And she says, Dr. Lacey, I just don't care anymore what he does, whatever he does, he can do this. That's when I know, even before she's telling me that she's going to get a divorce. Because once someone doesn't care anymore, you can't just pump life back into them because they've had enough of the cycle where they realize he's never going to change. He keeps saying the same thing over and over and over again every time I believe him because I have attachment to the fantasy of who I want him to be, which doesn't exist. That was the fantasy when I met him 20 years ago, and I want him to be back to that person. He's not shown back up since. The reality sets in. She's now accepted it, but she has to have a plan. So they either leave with a plan or they leave because something tragic has happened where something just, there's no coming back from it. He's had an affair with the best friend. He smacked her. He's never hit her in 25 years of life, right? Whatever it may be, those are those situations. But on the other hand, I don't want to sound completely gloom and doom. Two people can work through a relationship and turn a toxic relationship to a healthy way of relating to each other. But this is the key. This is the strong key. I really want your listeners to hear this. Two people have to make that decision. Two people have to say, I want something different, but I don't want to be without you. Let's do whatever we need to do to get to that place. First, they take individual responsibility and think about what am I doing that's contributing to this dynamic? And then they can come together and say, how can we relate together, help from a healthy standpoint? But if you're kicking and screaming and thinking that us as therapists are going to have magic wands, I would be making a lot of money if I had a magic pill. It doesn't happen that way. We work best when the couple in front of us works best. And that means there's two people that want to grow.
Wow, I am so fascinated with this. This is so good. So Another question. Somebody says, everything you're saying, Dr. Lacey, is ringing a bell for me. I want to do the work. I want to heal. Where do they start? What do they do? Do they, start with a therapist? Can they start with you? You have this program, Woman Redeemed. Tell us about that. Where does somebody looking for this kind of help start?
I think if someone is saying that, they just started. They just said, you know what? I don't want what I've had anymore, and I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want something different. Now, what do I need to do? So right now, there's a couple of things that people can do, right? So if they don't necessarily have access to a therapist right away, they can listen to Sarah's podcast. They can listen to podcasts. They can read books. They can get exposure, because a lot of times people don't have exposure to information and how to. But if someone has never done any work, I highly suggest they find a therapist, or as you mentioned, a community where people are like-minded or someone can guide them. So I recommend a therapist who specializes in what they want to change. Because just as, and like in real estate, not all real estate agents are the same. So you want to get to someone who specializes in the work that you need to have done. That's the first thing. And the second thing is you need to start getting community. We know without a doubt, which is why I've done the work of the three pillars and other work, is that women, men too, but women especially, don't really get to the other side of healing unless they have a community. Because usually what I find, Sarah, is that if we don't trust, I'm just using heterosexual language, this can go to any relationship, but if we don't trust men, for example, we normally don't trust women either, right? So we have friends that are either going to enable us. But are we truly seen and known and accepted and being in spaces like that so that we've practiced vulnerability? Is just a little side note. It's just like if someone says, well, you know what, I've been promiscuous all the way up until I'm married, and now I'm gonna be monogamous. You've just practiced being promiscuous, and now all of a sudden you've never practiced monogamy. So it's the same concept. We have to practice being in healthy, trusting relationships, and it doesn't necessarily have to start with intimate physical relationships. It could start with friendships. So being community, so we know that individual work, community work, and then reprogramming work. If I kind of gave you some three basic steps that people can start right now that can start changing their life forever. But it's usually those three hallmarks have to happen, is the individual work and being in a community and reprogramming negative belief systems about yourself, because we can do self-esteem and all this other stuff. That doesn't come if we still believe we're not good enough. We got to start with the root work.
I had an aha moment with the community piece too, because we could do therapy individually for decades and decades and decades. But that community piece maybe is what's missing for some of our listeners. And you look at rehabilitation programs that actually work, and a lot of them do have that community piece built in. No different here when it comes to relationships, which I had never thought about before. Tell us about Woman Redeemed. What is this community? Speaking of communities, tell us
Yes,
about it.
I love the Women Redeemed community, and I birthed the Women Redeemed community not only in the legacy of my sister, who you'll hear about in my TED Talk, but because in my own work and in my own research, as I'm mentioning, the community piece is so important. So it started off as a 12-week program for me. So I used to do intensive work, and I used to get women together, and we did 12 weeks of intensive work in groups. And then we have a retreat. Our next retreat actually is in May. So we have a retreat where we rent out a beautiful home in Orlando, Florida. And the women, it's not necessarily a retreat where we're coming to doing pedicures and manicures. This is what we're doing, the work of the pillars. We're doing 18 hours of therapy, so to speak, in a weekend. And I use all of the three pillars: mindset, the inner work, and the body work. We do equine therapy. We go to the rage room, Sarah. We're tearing up cars. We're doing all the things that I embody in that practice. But not everyone can necessarily can get on a plane and come to Orlando, Florida. So the Women Redeem, we have a monthly membership where we do a webinar. We do Zooms once a month, where they get to meet the other members, and I make sure that there's a push towards accountability, that you're not just coming and learning from the community, but you're engaging in the community, because I know that that is a key. And I would even recommend doing a community if you can't necessarily afford, or you don't have access to individual therapy. And I'm a therapist. I would say get into a community. Because when you get into a community, like, just think about it, it's easy for people to think about this from a money standpoint. If you're around millionaires all the time, it's hard to go back to be around broke people because now you have a millionaire mindset, right? Because now you want it. You want to be around like people who are making things happen, right? So it's the same thing when it comes to the healing community, that when you're around people who are healing and they're like, they're killing and making changes in their life, it's hard to go back to people who have a fixed mindset. This is the way that I am. You're going to be looking at these people and you're going to get a wrestle and you're going to get frustrated with them because you're just wanting, like, there's so much more. So that's why I believe a community, even if you had to choose one or the other, I always tell people get into a community where healing, because then eventually you're going to get a therapist anyway. But you're like,
Yeah.
I can't be in this space because I want more. So the Women Redeem is a monthly membership where we do webinars, we do a book club, we do a Zoom once a month. And most importantly is it has an element of a discount program through a program called Access. So they get a program that wherever they are in the world, they can put in their zip code or their geographic information and gives them a discount to things that they already purchased. So in Orlando, Florida, they'll get a discount to Disney, to Universal, to AMC, to their favorite restaurants. And then it automatically it doubles what they get back from that program alone for the $35 that they're paying a month for the membership. And that's why it's important. Not only our mental health is important to me, but our financial health, because we will more likely take advantage of opportunities when we feel financially secure. So we make sure that that happens in our membership as well.
Well, girl, as soon as we hang up, I'm going on and I am joining this community. I am so impressed by you. You're a complete rock star. I want more. I want to learn. And I want to keep growing because that's life, right? We constantly have to keep looking at ourselves, working on ourselves, and healing, really. And we talk so much about healing on this show, but I love that you're giving us actual tangible tools. And things to actually grab onto, and believe that there is another side, the other side to coming out of trauma, right? And I appreciate so much everything you've shared on this show. I adore you. I thank you. And I can't wait to see you at Woman Redeemed. And you guys, you can find her at janielacey.com. We're going to link to it. And you'll see her on TV and all the other great things that she's doing. Watch the TED Talk. It's really amazing. Janie Lacey, thank you so much for your time here on Bar Fights.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Bar Fights with attorney Sarah Klein, taking on issues that matter. Please check out our website at barfightspodcast.com, Instagram at barfightspodcast, or Twitter at barfights_pod for the latest show updates and archives.